Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information of this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to BizRocket Radio. This is John Baker, and I'm here once again with my host, Stone Payton. Stone, you've been MIA for like 3 weeks. You just leave me hanging here. You know, what's going on? You traveling? What's happening?
I'm a busy guy, man. I am now the grand poobah in charge at Business Radio X of remote broadcast and event marketing. So my latest thing is, have you ever heard of this Mudathlon series?
You know what? I had two friends who just did it.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
They said it's crazy.
It
did you go?
It is crazy. No, I haven't been, but we're going to be doing remote broadcast at like the next five or six of these things. The guy, Jeff Graves, that runs that, also runs the Georgia Marathon. I was on the phone with him this morning, getting all that set up, doing trade shows out in Las Vegas. And so, yeah, I've been busy doing the trade show remote broadcasting.
Too busy for us.
Yeah.
You've flown the nest.
I've outgrown you, man.
So depressed. Now, that run is like 14 miles over like mud banks and walls, all sorts of crazy stuff, isn't it?
It is, but there's beer at the end, as
well,
I understand it.
Incentive.
In fact, I think that's how we're getting funded, is I think the big beer companies are willing to throw some money at it so they could pay these rednecks to come up and do the radio show. So, it's everybody wins, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good, man. Well, that's great. That's great. So you travel around, traveling Wilbury. All right. Well, that's good stuff. Well, today, we've got a great show here at BizRocket today. We've got the three guests we've had a chance to catch up a little bit with, and you guys are in for a treat for sure. Our first guest is Emil Parody, and Emil is owner of the Referral Institute and has had a long track record and experience in this industry and also in a couple of others. Emil, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background, give people foundation.
Yeah, it's a real obvious background for marketing. I spent 27 years in the Marine Corps.
Perfect train gets you ready to go to make sure marketing is good, because those guys are very, 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 market oriented.
It's all about planning.
Yeah.
And that's what we were big in.
That's right. You know, I was teasing Emil. Have you seen his bio picture?
No.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It doesn't look anything like him.
I'll show it to you. I'm going to show it to Stone, and he can get his immediate response on it.
Let's have a look. See. Oh my!
He's military.
He is, man. He is ready to take over
the
country.
I was telling him earlier. His wife says he's got to smile a little bit more, but he looks like a professional, no doubt. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'd be ready for inspection, except for the beard. first sergeant would be all over me.
They would not enjoy that very much. No. So good. So what about your business? What about the Referral Institute?
Well, we like to help people work less, have more fun, and make more money. But that's just a cover for the hard work that has to be done in order to have that happen.
So tell us a little bit more about the Institute. Who are you guys working with? What do you do?
Yeah, the Referral Institute is actually international. We're in at least a dozen countries around the world, all over the United States, a bunch of folks like me working with business professionals, helping them to develop a systematic approach to referral marketing, building relationships to get business.
That's great. Now, how long have you been doing that?
Well, I started in earnest probably about 13, 14 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And what tends to be a good client for you? Who comes to you to help with referrals?
Yeah, the good client for me is really someone who's already out there networking, someone who's pretty active in trying to develop referrals, because those are the people that are motivated to build their business that way through the relationships. They're inclined to want to build relationships with folks. And so I look for people that are already networking. I look for people that are what we call lifelong learners. They read, they go to seminars, they study, they want to be good at what they do. So those are probably the two biggest characteristics I look for. As far as industry goes, you know, we run the gamut. I'm surprised at the number, the top three industries that I've worked with over the 9 years I've been here in Atlanta. I was shocked to see that business coaches were in the top three of clients for me, because I do a lot of coaching with them on their marketing.
Yeah.
So what kind of mistakes do people make when they try to go after this idea of referral marketing without the benefit of some expert counsel or training from you guys?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I see is people network too much. And I say that because they're an activity. One of my favorite little sayings is someone asked Dizzy Dean, a ball player, about how fast one of his teammates ran, and he said, well, there's a lot of up and down, but not much forward. And that's really what happens with a lot of people networking. There's a lot of activity, but they're like a stone across the top of the pond.
Yeah.
They're just skipping along and not really creating the relationships that are going to pay.
So deep is more important than wide, I guess.
Yeah, you need to have the wide for sure. You need to have the reach, but there needs to be within that wide, you have to identify where your markets are, of course, and then go deep.
Now, what approaches do you teach that, and not to give away any trade secrets or anything?
No, go ahead and give them away.
Just for free.
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
What types of things do you find work the best when you're sitting in front of a new person, a new client that's trying to build their business and develop? A lot of your literature talks about relationship marketing, mm-hmm. and I would imagine that's what helps to build on the referral side. What are you teaching them that's the most important?
Well, not to oversimplify, but it's a lot like dating. you know, you just can't jump right into give me some business. So you have to build a relationship, and that takes some time. There's really two important aspects. One is having a clear message and powerfully state it. You know, become really good at what your message is. And that takes a lot of study and introspection and analysis on what it is that you're trying to do and where your market is and so forth. The other side is what's my target market, and what are the networks that I'm going to be involved in that are going to give me access and connection to those target markets. Then within those networks, who are the people that are going to be my key resources? And if I could, I mean, I'd reach in my pocket right now. I have about 6 or 7 business cards in my right pocket, which is where I keep my money for any erstwhile muggers out there. But I do it because that's where I put my hand during the day to remind me I'm working for these people. And if there's an opportunity, I need to be aware of it.
Right.
For them,
right. The whole concept of kind of that messaging is in line with the whole concept of the branding. I mean, that sounds like it's a huge buzzword nowadays. Mm-hmm. Where does branding come into play with what you do?
It's funny. I just came from the Certified Networker group this morning. Some of my clients and we were talking about branding, public relations, collateral material. How does that all fit together? In the Marine Corps, we talk about combined arms. You don't shoot them with one weapon system. You shoot them with a few weapon systems that are going to make the one really work well. And so it's the same way with this collateral. How is that fit together? And what's this branding that's going to carry through, that's going to compel people to ultimately get to the big enchilada, you know, at the end of the end of the rainbow there?
Yeah, it helps. Kind of, again, in that deep, not wide concept, it almost helps to keep people's, what they do, what they offer in mind. That's really what the whole branding phenomena is all about, right?
Yes, and one of the Johns and I were talking out in the lobby.
We have three Johns today, so after a meal, it's all going to be about John, so it's nice and easy.
Yeah, but we were talking about niche, you know, the niche, and we talked a little bit about The Long Tail, a great book, and the idea of being owning your market, finding out what your market is, and then own it, and focus everything on it. If you get some business outside your market, but it still makes sense for you, fine.
Fine, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but focus your energy on that message.
Now, referrals and coaching, and there's tons of people out there doing that. What makes you guys different?
I think it's the tie.
You think? It's a very nice
that's
tie.
It's the nicest tie in the studio at the moment.
And yeah. He's got the Marine Corps. That is the Marine Corps.
Yes.
That's yeah. Well, it's awesome.
That's
very
right.
Man, it's a good-looking guy.
Yeah,
Just needs a smile.
I wore the tie because I knew I was going to be on the radio today. So.
don't mind Stone. He's so anti-dress. Do you own a suit? Not one. You have one?
My dad lent me a sport coat the other day because I had to go to the BMA luncheon.
Oh.
But I got to get it back.
Was that the,
and I
was
had to do the
bedroom?
Miami Vice thing where you roll the sleeves up. You know?
Still living with them, aren't you? You still with them?
It's a really nice
basement.
Second story
the basement's
bedroom.
Nice. I'm sorry. I digress. I had to.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what sets you guys apart?
Yeah. not to be too glib about it, but one of the things that we do is we help you train your referral partners so that you're going to get referrals. You know, a lot of people talk about you got to get referrals, you got to do this. And one of the things one of our little sayings within the organization is it's all my fault. If you're not getting the number of referrals you want and the quality of referrals you want, it's your fault. And usually your fault comes from the fact that you haven't helped people to be able to refer you. So there's some information they need to have. There's some motivation they need to have. You know, you need to chum the waters. You need to be doing things for them and, you know, staying in their mind and plus letting them know what it is you're doing and what it is you want them to do. So that's one of the biggest things we do. And a number of things, programs that we have are oriented towards that. We do one seminar that you can't come alone. You have to bring a referral partner with you.
Yeah.
I always say network in pairs. One holds them, the other one hits them. That's how you get the referrals. It works really well.
Oh, okay. Straight up. There you go. It's kind of like football. Hold them up so I can take them out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So when you're in a networking situation, you know a guy named Bob Littell?
Sure.
Okay. So you guys know Bob. And the whole net weaving concept, mm-hmm. I love the idea. And this group that we work with, Kettering, is very big into paying it forward, and it's mm-hmm. great. So when you're in a networking environment, right, and that's what you're there for and what everybody is there for, what is the best way to get results out of that kind of an hour or 2 hours of your time? What's the best way to get results from that?
Yeah, I would say, number one, you have to have the clear message that I can tell you what I do in two or three sentences, not 30 seconds or 60 seconds, but two or three sentences that give you an idea about what I do. If you want to know more, you're going to ask me. The other thing is I need to make it as easy for you to help me as I can make it. And so if I'm just meeting you, you don't know me very well, you're certainly not going to open your wallet for me. You're not going to introduce me to your best friends or your best clients or customers. But if I can identify a really easy way for you to help me, I'm looking for radio shows to be on. I'm looking for speaking opportunities. I'd like to be introduced to that person across the room. That's the way you start a relationship, and I'm going to make it as easy as I can for you to help me because you're going to feel good about it.
So you're right out of the gates, you're saying, hey, you know, these are the kind of things that would help me. You're telling that before mm-hmm. you're building that relationship? Is it?
No, certainly you've got to go through the dance.
Yeah, the dance, right.
Sure, and you know, you need to get, and certainly listening, finding out connections, opportunities for you to help them. You asked me how do you get people help you, but certainly you want to start out looking for ways to help them,
mm-hmm.
And certainly knowing who's in the room if you're in a networking event or something of who they might want to talk to tonight is a great place to start.
How do you become a center of influence? What's the key to becoming the person that people will go to when they're looking for? You know, it's the other way around. You're trying to help people more than people because it all, you know, the whole synergy works. How do you become a center of influence?
be a little bit of a busybody.
Busybody, okay.
Yeah, you got to stick your nose in other people's business.
All right.
And, you know, you got to ask them questions. You got to find out what they want, what's important for them. It might be somebody's interested in baseball. So, you know, maybe I feed their baseball Jones a little bit here, and mm-hmm. and we use that as a connection. They're interested in me because they know I know something about them. So, you know, you got to start somewhere looking for how I can help you in a meaningful way.
So if you would sum up maybe the process of building referral, building your business through these relationship pieces and ultimately referrals, what would the top three things be that people would need to do?
Mm-hmm. I guess start with the it's all my fault.
You got to prep people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make sure that the people you're expecting to help you know what it is that you expect. Certainly having a clear message. I think a lot of people overlook the value of that when they're networking, of how important it is to be able to concisely tell people what you do so you're not boring them. And then if I wanted to just throw out a little tidbit that I think can have a huge impact on almost anybody who's in business, and that is to network up. Don't network with people that you're just comfortable with, the environment, but you want to network up. If that's where you want your business to go, then that's where you have to go.
Very sage advice, sage advice. So one of the last question I have centers around a question we ask all our guests, which is if you had a pearl of wisdom to give to the listeners, which executives, business owners that are out there, on things that you've seen that have helped make people successful, what would it be?
Gosh, I just told you everything I knew, and now
you're done.
You asked me for one more. It's amazing.
He's tapped out. It's all over.
It's it.
You give me the top three. Come on, give me a break, man.
I give and I give.
No, it's just one more. I'm just looking one more.
One more. I think really to stay focused on the last thing I tell myself when I go into a sales call is, Emil, shut up. And I think probably the biggest thing is to learn to listen well and find the important things for the other person.
All right. Good stuff. Well, Emil, it's been great to have you on the show today. If somebody wants to get in contact with you, how would they reach out? What's the best way to get in communication?
Well, I'm an old guy, so calling me on the telephone's really a
phones work still?
A great thing.
Wow. I don't think Stone has a phone.
But you know, the old referralinstituteatlanta.com is another easy way for people to find out a little bit more about us.
Okay. Well, great. Well, can you hang around? I know you're flying to
New Orleans,
down to the Big Easy. Right. So you're heading out. Can you hang out for a little bit? And
I'll be here.
Well, great. Good stuff. So our next guest is John Fayad, and John is the literary coach, and he's got a wonderful background and a great resume, and I can't do it justice, so I'll let him talk about his background. John, welcome in.
Thank you, John. Well, I thought about this when I give workshops on book concept development and such. And there's been a string in my desire to write, my love of writing, that goes back, I think, to college, where I used to guarantee a 3.5 or better on any English paper. And
that
I guess
you wrote?
That I would write.
Wow. Now, was that you wrote for someone else?
Well, I would, yes.
Like Stone. Stone would come to you and say, I need a paper written.
That's right.
I most certainly would. Absolutely. For 3.5, you damn right I would.
Guaranteed your money back. And actually, that's when I began ghostwriting, because in essence, that is ghostwriting. So,
there you go.
So there's been a string of that. I got.
Well, wait a minute. Can you spell mom and them?
No, I can't.
Like, we're going to go have dinner with mom and them? So if you can't spell that, then I don't know if you can help me or not.
Oh, man. You just ignore him. Please ignore him.
Right.
He's, try to lock him up, but we can't. We got to let him out every now and then.
I got my master's in advertising from Michigan State, and Coca-Cola hired me off campus. So I was in new product development for the first 10 years. I've had my run-ins, you might say, with corporations. I love the company, great company here in Atlanta, but I got a little tired of the bureaucracy. I've always been sort of an entrepreneur, so I started consulting, top-line growth, and for companies, AT&T actually brought me into NCR Corporation when they acquired NCR in 1992 or roughly thereabouts. When they trivested out of that, I left as well, consulted again, and then started an online business called Business Book Review. A concept developed by my business partner back in the early 80s, So I took it from 70 paper-based subscribers to over 700,000 readers worldwide.
Wow.
And indeed, think business cliff notes. I had 11 writers around the country. Yeah, yeah. I would receive 1,500 business books a year and pick the best 50. So it's something I'd love to do. So as you can imagine, I read a lot of books. And to differentiate myself, I started to map content to Fortune 500's leadership competencies. So that was also very interesting, and I started giving webinars and seminars on best concepts from business books. I learned a great deal about what constitutes a successful book, what publishers and literary agents are looking for. So in 2005, I started a side business called The Literary Coach, because people would ask me, well, you know, I think I have a book concept. How do I get started? Or I don't have a book concept, but I think I should differentiate myself somehow from other consultants and such. Or I have memoirs that I'd like to write, but I don't understand the process. So I started The Literary Coach, and I would have clients. And I would help them develop their book concept, architect their book, which is really building out the outline of the book, in essence. Once you have an outline, you can truly write against that outline, which is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I would develop the entire book proposal, which would be about 50 pages single-spaced or 100 pages double-spaced. And then they would be able to either take that to a literary agent, which is what I would always recommend. First,
a literary agent, maybe for the layman out here, what do they do?
Well, a literary agent knows the acquisitions editors at publishing houses. So what they do is they have these, you talk about a network, Emil, they have a great network of publishers around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Many work in specific genres. Could be nonfiction or fiction. Some work in poetry, whatever the case may be, and it's usually a discipline or something that they love. For instance, if it's rock climbing, or sports or such, they'll then want to work with want-to-be authors, writers who maybe have written a book about sports or any activity, or accounting. So it could be nonfiction along those lines. So what they'll do then is present the book concept to an acquisitions editor. The editor will then determine if that book concept fits into their, you know, what they're looking for their business plan for their specific publishing house. And different publishing houses have different genres that they prefer to work with as well. So that's the role of the literary agent. So many want to be authors, many writers, look forward to that. They don't know how to break into the business. The book proposal, it also helps the individual organize their ideas. Now, it may be that you won't find a commercial publisher that's interested in your work, and that happens. Out of every 100 books, maybe 0.5% would really find their way to a publisher.
Wow.
So it gives you, though, an idea of, well, you may want to self-publish. And the publishing industry has changed so significantly, especially with the advent of the internet, that you can reach what you couldn't reach before, or have what you couldn't have before, and that is distribution.
Yeah, I mean, you can distribute on an iPad or on anything electronically. You don't have to have a huge printer type of thing where physically the book has to be printed, right? Or is that still the case?
Well, people do like about 25 to 30%, you might say now. Look how many Kindles are out there, as example, and that's really grown. It's become more usable, the interaction, the interoperability of the software works beautifully for them, and the format of that of the Kindle. So you still have to have a printed book, but the ebook is very accessible to people. Then there are blogs. There are people that never really put the entire book or concept into, say, 280 or 320 pages. So it's really, it goes back to the intention of the individual. What do you want? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to write a book?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the interplay I have with a prospect.
Now, so when you made that transition from corporate America, NCR, and then you started doing this entrepreneurial piece, what was the hardest thing for you to make that transition? I have so many people that are in where you were. What was it that made it successful?
ignorance.
You just jumped off the cliff, man. Right. Let's go.
Ignorant of reality.
And then you got to survive, right?
Along those lines. You've got to have confidence in yourself because you're going to be out there without a net. And you've got to have a you have to understand the core of yourself and really believe in yourself. So I think confidence is very important. Networking is very critical as well. You've got to know, and I really love what you said, Emil, about networking up. I think it's critical. Challenge yourself. Not many people can do it. Yeah. People are not raised that way. They're not taught that way in school.
Stay in your box, right? Yeah. Stay where you're comfortable.
Right, and you've got to learn to break out of that, you know, especially in this day and age when you can't really be guaranteed that, oh, you've got a job with a corporation, maybe not in a specific discipline like engineering or medicine or such. Maybe you're in marketing or something and a spurious discipline. And you're really not certain, you know. Maybe you're not a CPA. CPAs, then you have a base that you can work with and a competency that can't be replicated.
Right.
But if you don't have that, then... but that, I'll get to that in the pearl of wisdom at the end.
All right, don't go.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Emil, all the bullets were gone. He had nothing left.
Well, he looked exhausted too.
He did. He was wasted. It was just tired.
They call that firing your load in artillery. You're out.
It all goes back to the military. It's awesome.
Well, you're talking about a double entendre.
Although he did have, I like the listen. That was a good one. I like that one. He pulled that one out though. It was good. All right, he's got to stop laughing. All right, John, go ahead.
Well, there would be prospects, people who would want to write books. So that's what I would help them do. I think the most exciting part is book concept development, sitting with an individual and sort of like it's almost like a psychology session in a way, or as a psychiatrist, you're trying to pull something out of someone. You try to understand the person, what they want that book to be about, or what they think the book should be about. So it's working with them, and eventually you come up with a concept. Then you, you breathe life into it or architect it by looking at some kind of outline of this, or what I call a logic flow. Hmm. So to me, that's the most exciting part of this.
That's totally fun.
Building, oh, hell yeah. Yes.
Building, yeah, so much fun.
Yes.
Very cool. So who are your clients? I mean, I know, are you still doing the book review thing? Is that
no, we sold that company.
Sold that.
Yes.
That still exists, though.
It's yes, it does, but...
not as much as it was when you were there.
No, a shell of what it was. I know. We all want to believe that, don't
cut
we?
Cut bait and ran, didn't you?
Right, we leave something.
So your business now. So
well, it's a lot of executive coaches, consultants, speakers, mm-hmm. a lot of speakers, because you really want to start to build your platform. Yeah. People who want to write memoirs, authors who currently have books out. As a publisher of Business Book Review, I met many well-established authors. And sometimes you then block because, okay, what will my next book be about? I've got to build on this. So when I did launch the business in full earnest at theliterarycoach.com, I reached out to many authors who, you know, established authors, very well-known authors and such, and to help them develop their next book concept. I'm currently ghostwriting two books, so which takes me into a completely different place.
Yeah, tell us the difference between that. I mean, it sounds like the first one really is you're really helping somebody that has the ability to write on their own their concepts and get their ideas on paper. Tell us about ghostwriting.
Well, I'm very selective as to who I'll ghostwrite for because writing is a very lonely journey. And the subject matter has to be something that's close to your own heart and soul. Mm-hmm. So I'll ghostwrite. There's I'm not going to mention names or anything, mm-hmm. but a company, a search firm that is looking to establish its own, develop its platform, really. So along those lines, and I love the concept of the book. So I get close enough to the principals, in this case, the entire firm, and know two individuals would be that would be writing the book, and I would write for them. Another is for a well-known author who's got two or three books out currently and really doesn't have the time anymore to write the next book. So a lot of it is understanding the style of that author. So it seems almost imperceptible. Your writing style is not very different from theirs.
Yeah.
But the process then of bringing the ideas out of the writer who wants to be an author or the author is very interesting. It's a series of interviews where you have come up with a series of questions, And then you have the structure for the book, because basically you've written the book proposal and built the book for them.
Yeah. Now, do you feel like there's a book in everybody?
Yes.
I've heard people say that. Do you genuinely feel like that's pretty much true?
Yes, and 8 out of 10 people believe there's a book in them.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I was like, this is a great, I've never even heard of this business. And you still?
I've been in and around it because I've been hired and fired from a lot of consulting firms. So, I mean, but I've never really been neck deep in a specific project or anything.
Everybody has a story in them, you know, and they don't know how to bring that out or if they should really. Some know definitely what they want. There are so many different kinds of people. Because now when you, in this kind of consulting or business, you get very close to the core of an individual. You know, because they're sharing something deep with you, especially those who want to write their memoirs,
mm-hmm.
or those who are uncertain. I don't push people. You know, if you want to develop a book, that's fine, but you've got to believe that in your heart. So it is a very close relationship with someone as you develop their book concept. Yeah, everyone though, Stone, yes, has a book in them, and it's a great way to distinguish yourself. Now, something I want to cover is this. Literary agents and publishers don't just look for strong book concepts. They're looking for two things from a first-time author, or even an established author. More so a first-time author. The book concept and the platform. Many individuals don't realize, they may have a great book concept, and I've come across people in the past who have wonderful concepts, very unique, very different from what's out there, but they don't have a platform. They don't have a high visibility to their target audience,
mm-hmm.
a recurring visibility.
They don't host their own radio show, John.
Well, there you go. Biz Rocket Radio.
Biz Rocket Radio is
pad
a, it's
for,
a, yeah, it's a wonderful platform for a book
because
people know you. You can move 5, 10,000 units yourself, books, which is what a publisher will want to see, especially if it's a nonfiction book. A well-selling nonfiction book is 60,000 units in a 12 to 18-month period, you know. Fiction is different. They're looking for six digits, really. It's 100,000 or more books. So if you're saying, like, through my own seminars, workshops, webinars, I can move books myself, they're going to love that. It's a key part of a book proposal is the promotional plan. That shows that you have the platform. So, if you were interested in writing a book, the two things we work on in parallel is the book concept development and you getting really serious about building your platform, and there are ways to do that.
Right, right. So, and I've heard a lot of neat things just in this, you know, 20-minute discussion. What sets you aside from, there's got to be other people out there that are doing this. What sets you aside from competition?
You know, I knew you would ask that, and I've always, and even as publisher of Business Book Review, I don't really care about competition. I don't look at competition. I look at the end user and what they want, and then I'm not being highfalutin with this, but then the competition's following me. So I think what my competition, and it's also how I define competition. To me, my competition is lethargy. that is a bigger piece of the market than anyone else who may be doing or not doing what I'm doing.
Right, well, so if everybody has a book in them, then obviously that's the problem, is they just don't, they don't know, A, how to do it,
right,
and B, are scared to do it, right?
Right.
How much does that play in the role of just being scared, oh my God, I can't write a sentence, I'm not going to write a book?
It's amazing, because you have the fear of success and the fear of failure
mm.
working at the same time, it seems. You don't feel you're worthy, which is the fear of success, or you don't feel you're capable, which is the fear of failure.
Mm.
So it's both. So to me, lethargy is a big competitor, and it's breaking through that wall and letting people realize that, look, you can distinguish yourself.
So how are you getting introduced to new people? I mean, from the referral kind of concept that Emil was talking about, what are you doing to get yourself out there and let people know what you do, hang your shingle, as it were?
Well, a lot of it's word of mouth. It started with theliterarycoach.com, and then I began putting out newsletters, a 300-word abstract using Constant Contact. Here's a little plug for a company.
There you go, nice.
Love Constant Contact.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
Very cool stuff. And there are a lot of online articles, like e-zine articles and such, that I would submit my material to. A lot of it's word of mouth as well. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm so busy now with these two ghostwriting projects that I haven't put out a 300-word abstract in quite a while, you know. And so that's part of it. I do give workshops. What I want to do eventually is start to work on webinars where you could take, say, the three major components of a book proposal and break it down into 3 1-hour sections or segments, mm-hmm. you know, so you're really helping people that way. So right now it's word of mouth.
So that would be, I'm sorry to go back to the seminar piece, that would be doing a seminar on the book. So you write the book and use the seminar kind of as a outline on it?
Well, imagine if all of us right here were in a workshop. You each have a different perspective on the world, a different book or something. I would first present the outline of the business of the book proposal.
Oh,
what are the elements of it?
I see.
Book concept development. So there's a lot of, so if it's an hour session, the first session's on concept, second session's on platform, third section's on promotion, mm-hmm. self-promotion. So we spend an hour talking about each of those things. How do you build an author platform? There are 6 steps to that. What are the elements of a strong promotional plan? What are agents and publishers looking for? And once you have the book proposal, then you have to develop a query letter because you never send a full proposal out. You send a query letter to generate interest.
So you don't send a whole manuscript or several chapters?
Oh, no. Many people, good question, many people make the mistake of, well, I'm going to sit down and write the great American novel. Well, if it's a novel, yes, I would recommend doing that, developing characters, you have setting and all of that. But if it's a nonfiction, I would first recommend not writing the book. Don't write the manuscript. Because at the end of that process, then you're going to say, well, what do I do with this now? You don't send a full, never send a full manuscript to an agent or a publisher. You send the book proposal, which is a very compressed version of the manuscript, really. But you don't even send that. You send a query letter, which is like a PR piece, a 1-page, 1 1/4 page summarization of the overview of the book, why you're the one person to write it, who would be most attracted to it, and then ask if they would, you know, want to receive the book proposal. That's the process.
So I wouldn't have known that. I would have been tempted to send them the 3 best chapters that I thought were the coolest stories or whatever, right?
That's part of the book proposal. So you do want to include a full chapter so they see your style of writing.
But you don't want to lead with that. You want to lead with this query letter.
Query letter, yes. Yeah. 600 words or so as to what the concept is about. And it has to be creative. Open with a quote as example, you know. So, and then who would read it and why? What's the benefit of the book? How is it unique? One of the most important pieces you should also do is do a walk the shelves. Who's your competition? Now, in that regard, knowing your competition is very important because you're competing with other books out there. Not only that, but it helps you develop your book concept further. How far will you go? Further will you go in your book compared to what others have done on the same subject? This distinguishes you. This creates interest or even controversy, let's say. Where publishers love controversy.
Now, I noticed that you launched this in 2009.
Yes.
Pretty much the worst business market ever. Like, beginning of 2009, it was like the sky is falling, the world is coming apart. How did that go for you, kicking off things in 2009?
Well, it actually, when I launched Business Book Review online, that was at the onset of the last recession. Which was 2000.
Timing down.
Perfect. Timing's excellent, you know.
Awesome.
And the result is is equally interesting.
Yeah.
No, it was difficult. Yeah. But after selling Business Book Review, they kept me for a period of time, and that happens in all acquisitions. Then you say, well, it's time to start something new.
Yeah.
It worked out well, actually. If you're different enough, you know, and you know it, there's a need out there. Then you can survive. It's still very tough. It's tough for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
In these times, actually, this is a great time for a person to write a book or to sit down and look. I'm a consultant. I'm an executive coach. There are 50,000 executive coaches in the United States alone. How am I different? How am I going to get out there and distinguish myself? Well, you may believe that as an executive coach, you've got something that you do so much better than anyone else, but no one knows you. So, write a book. That might be the best process. That's your calling card,
right,
in essence.
Right.
You know, that's why most people don't realize why they want to write a book. Authors don't write books to sell books. They write books to sell consulting or speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the reason. Fiction's a completely mm-hmm. different story. You may be shooting for movie rights. So it's a good time to write a book.
Yeah.
What would you sell the movie rights to the John Baker Biz Rocket Radio Show for? Have you got a figure That's, in mind, John?
We're in the seven digits, at least seven digits. That's no decimal points. We got an accountant coming back on, so we're going to figure out all about this money here in a second. All right. So, John, run out of time. So here you go. Pearl of wisdom for our listeners. What would your pearl of wisdom be?
Well, John, I've thought about that. I think it's staying in touch with your innate talents and learned skills. Trust that these things are those things that will carry you in the long run. And don't deny yourself. If you work for a corporation and you're not involved in a specific hard discipline like medicine or law or accounting, then prepare to go independent someday. And I would tell that to someone who's in college, in mid-career, or at the sunset of their career. You'll never be happy or successful until you're on your own doing what you love to do.
You know, only a guy who writes for a living would have prepared that well.
And it's all written out. But why did he look at me when he said, at the sunset of your career? Was that a coincidence, or he just thinks it's about over for me?
Well, I don't know, Stone. You may want to make that determination yourself. Well, John, that was great. That was
Thank
wonderful.
You.
Good stuff.
Enjoyed it.
So if somebody needs to get in contact with you, they're just burning to write a book, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Visit theliterarycoach.com. That's my website. You'll find all my contact information, theliterarycoach.com.
All right. Well, that's perfect. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you.
And can you hang out for a minute?
Certainly.
We're going to finish up with Jonathan Hamilton. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
I'm doing great.
He's been very patient, don't you think?
He has. He's been sitting back here perfectly, just behaving very well. Stone back there, on the other hand, forget it. You got to put the kid in the cage. All right, so John, tell us a little bit about the accounting news report and maybe a little bit on your background to start with so we know who you are.
Okay. I've covered the accounting profession since 2000, and in covering the accounting profession, you know, I'd done it for a variety of publications. Well, the same publication, but it had been owned by a variety of companies, and it had been sold and sold and sold. And it got to the point where, you know, I knew my sources very well. Most of them are accounting partners at major firms. And in late 2009, I was having lunch with an accounting partner from KPMG. And, you know, we were just talking about life and some things as we were closing up. And he said, he just kind of looked at me. He said, hey, do you really like what you do? And I said, I love what I do. He said, and if I was you, I'd do it for myself. And looking back, that was sort of my jumping.
So he basically said, jump.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That
was what John said. He said, just get out.
You know, have
the cojones to go.
Exactly.
Right? All right.
And that was truly my jumping the shark moment. At the publication I was working for, it was a major company, but I kind of looked at him when he said it, and I thought, what do you know that I don't know? And you know, he said, hey, I don't know anything. He said, but I'm a restructuring partner, and the way this works is people are going to look and eventually say, we can get this done cheaper. We can have more control over what we do. He's been here for 10 years. It's just going to be time for a change, and you're out. And what do you do? Well, if I was you, I would be the agent of that change rather than be the victim of your change.
Mm-hmm.
So for the next year, I kind of thought about that. And finally, it got to be, and I don't want to sound glib or trite, but it was almost like that moment in Shawshank Redemption when Andy Dufresne says, I'm going to get busy living or get busy dying. And I just thought, if you don't do it now, why would you do it in 6 months? Why would you do it in a year? And it finally was, this isn't a great economy, but so what? The best businesses in the world weren't always launched in the greatest economies. So, you know, I made the leap. And mm-hmm. In January 2011, we launched Accounting News Report.
Okay. And so tell us about the report. What is it? Who does it go to? What's it about?
What accountingnewsreport.com is... It's the web presence for the newsletter, which is Accounting News Report. And it's basically baseball today for accountants. it gives them where the firms are going, where the people at the firms are going, what the firms are doing. Basically, it's what accountants love. It's numbers about their business and about the firms in their business.
Give me an example of what types of articles have been in there recently that accountants get all jazzed up about. Do accountants get jazzed up?
they do.
They do.
I think that's a great question.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
No, that's a great question.
I talked about this earlier, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the perception is the accounting profession is extremely boring. You know, and I tell people every week.
Secretly, they probably party like rock stars, don't they?
Well, tell me where you're based. The guy's based out of Las Vegas. I mean, there's a whole other world here that we know nothing about.
They're in there. They all get together, and they're like, okay, nobody's watching. Let's go. Right?
It's sort of like, you know, the old mob thing of two sets of books. You know, I the front set of books is we're boring people. The back set of books is we're very interesting people.
All right, well, good.
Yeah.
So what gets them fired up? Tell me about the
things. Well, there are several things that get them fired up. One is data about either the firms where you rank the firms based on revenue, partners, professionals, total staff, that kind of stuff. Or it's a niche of their business. You know, the SEC niches, you know, the big four audits, 90% of the SEC traded companies. And they love to know, where do we stand versus our competitors? And the great thing that gets accountants jacked up is charts, graphs. I don't even know if the numbers have to make sense, although they will tell you. If you're off by...
It's like crack for an accountant.
Yeah, exactly.
Chart.
It's like a bag of M&Ms for a three-year-old.
Yeah,
it's,
they don't care if even if it's in there, as long as it's a bag.
When that newsletter arrives in their email box and they open it and it's got charts, Christmas.
It's like a home run. I mean, it's
absolutely
like shooting fish in a barrel, man. How can you miss? Well, there's no nervousness about getting in this business. You know how to get them, right?
Now, are they paying you to get this newsletter, or do people sponsor the newsletter? It sounds like great work if you get it, but how are you eating here?
No, I absolutely. Most of the big firms subscribe, and you know, through site licenses. Well, there are also small firms, and that's really another misconception. Besides the fact, John, that accountants are boring. That
no, I didn't say that. I just said.
You were thinking it, though. You were thinking.
No. I think that was Stone, maybe, who said that.
I think that would have been Stone, for sure.
But the other misconception about the accounting profession is it's either your individual CPA, because that's how a lot of us draw our perceptions, you know, our personal interactions. And the accounting profession is, you know, there's 40,000 firms in the United States. So that's a wide gamut from the big four, which are Fortune 500 type size companies, all the way down to your local CPA who does your taxes and your tax planning and all that. So there's a humongous strike zone in there. And anyone who wants to know what's going on in the accounting profession is a potential subscriber. And, you know, luckily that we have had a very good response.
So the person that would sign up for your
for the newsletter
is paying a due or
basically, you know, the big four pay a multiple subscription rate because they are the big four and they demand volume discounts.
Now, are you in with them? I mean,
yeah,
is this,
yeah.
Okay.
Basically, the 10 largest firms in the country are subscribers through site licenses, and you know that basically. They pay a set fee, and you know, all their partnership get it. You know, which at the big four is, you know, you figure 1,200 subscriptions or so per firm. Mm-hmm. And at the big four, actually, they also distribute it to a lot of their professionals. So I mean, you know, at you know, firms like Deloitte and KPMG, you're talking about 4,000 and 5,000 people at per firm.
Now, how many newsletters do these guys have? I mean, do they have like 20 or 30 of these things that go out all the time, or how does that work?
Well, I there are a lot of newsletters within the accounting profession and, you know, trade publications, so to speak. But and that's why my publication is fairly heavily niched in that I deal with the SEC marketplace and I deal with partners who are well-respected by the accounting profession with their facts and figures. You know, like I have a data provider and SEC information, audit analytics, and most of the largest firms in the country are their clients, and they vetted that data, and we have like a very good working relationship with, it's like this triangle where everyone basically works on the data that's going to be published. And so, you know, it's kind of great for a small publisher like me, it's almost like a quality control process that I don't have to worry about the phone calls on the back end of, hey, this isn't right. And accountants will tell you if you're off by 1/1000th of a percentage point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you're getting the information from these sources kind of inside. They're writing the material. They're getting the statistics together, putting it to you, and then you're putting it together and then publishing it?
Yeah, I mean, like Audit Analytics, for instance, is a data compiler in the SEC marketplace, and they'll send me the quarterly audit change stuff.
Gotcha.
And we'll analyze it, we'll kick it back and forth, and we go back to the Big Four firms and we work with them and say, okay, does this make sense? Does this jive? And if it does, then we write the stories based on that. And so that's one facet of what we do. The other things I do are like breaking news, because accountants do like breaking news. Features on people that they all know in the profession that they follow. What are they doing? Why are they doing it? How are they making money? Because I want to make more money.
So were they like frothing at the mouth at the end of last year when the tax changes were like bam splattered on the, were they just like, oh my God, it's Christmas early? They were just crazy.
Well, they are, because that's just one piece. Yeah. Obamacare. That has the biggest firms and even the smallest firms, busy and jumping. Their clients, anything that's important to the accountants is what makes their clients ask them questions.
Yeah, so they know they want to be the answer person, right? They want to be.
Yeah, that's what their client pays them for. Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you? So these are the big four, right? That's kind of I got that. How about the smaller, CPA or somebody who's in private practice, are they going to benefit from this too?
They do, which is why when we publish this data, we don't just publish one thing and say, here it is and bam. What we do is, that's why we cover the breaking news and we cover who's going where, because recruiting is such a huge thing in the accounting profession nowadays that everyone wants to know who's moving where, why. It gives, even if it's just a name of so-and-so left Deloitte & Touche and went to a regional firm, why that's important is they then have that name, they go to LinkedIn, they like enter it into their Salesforce.com, CRMs, and all of a sudden they start spoking it across and they take that piece of data we had and it's viral. It's important because maybe that's someone they want to keep tabs on. So if they move again or want to move again, they can get them.
So we talked off air about, what's going on with kind of the aging of the accounting force, right? Where's that coming from? I mean, why is it not being replenished with younger people?
Well, I think some of it is a perception problem in that a lot of kids thought accounting's boring. Why would I want to do that?
I don't know why they'd think that. It doesn't make any – nobody would –
And who would think that?
I don't know.
I think it's a – well, it's just like on TV. Normally, or the movies, when you see a CPA or an accountant, they are portrayed as either a Weasley henchman who steals the money.
Awesome. Exactly.
We need an accounting sitcom.
With the round glasses, the little round glasses, that's usually what they – and the wire rims.
If Jerry Seinfeld had been an accountant, it would be a whole different story.
Yeah, that's right.
They wouldn't have a recruiting problem at all in the profession.
That's right, aspirations. You have somebody to look up to. Jerry is the guy. Right?
See, there you go.
Or Charlie. Charlie would be the other guy. He would probably be Charlie Sheen. No, never mind. Sorry.
Hey, that's just winning. But that's some of it. There's a perception that accountants are boring. And why would I want to do that? Because the other options they're being offered in school, if they are numbers related, they want a numbers related discipline, is they're looking at it and saying, well, why would I go into the accounting profession? I can go into finance and make so much more money. I can go to work for an investment bank, whatever. I can go to work for Google and get stock options and retire at 30.
Mm-hmm.
And, the accounting profession had to compete with that. Now, granted, the economy has sort of helped them out a little bit in that. It's funny the way.
You can retire at 30 or 70 if you were counting on that. Yeah, I'm not sure which one will work for you.
But that's a lot of it. There's a huge people demand. You figure at each of the big four firms, and there's an average of 25,000 total staff members. That's a lot of people to resupply the profession with.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a huge, there's a lot of coal that needs to be shoveled into that engine.
Yeah. Do they know it? Does industry know it?
Desperately. They know it. Yeah. Desperately.
What are they doing to solve the problem?
A lot of things. I mean, they're working with professional organizations like the AICPA. They are constantly doing, career days, at schools. And I mean, all the state societies, the Georgia Society of CPAs has a, list of speakers that they send to the schools to talk to the kids about, hey, CPA isn't boring. It's cool. You can do lots of great things. And, the ASCPA has launched a lot of interactive things on their websites to hook these kids in, because they've realized you got to hook the kids in when they're in late, what I would have called, because I'm not from the Pepsi generation, but, junior high.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, good. So accounting is not boring.
It is not.
You heard it here first.
Sounds like a book title to me.
What do you think?
I mean, we'd have to ask John.
John, we might need you to come in and help some of these CPAs rebrand themselves. Huh?
We've got the panel right here to help them.
God, all in one room.
We'd have to work on it a little.
It's not one seminar. It might be two. Maybe two sessions. All right. Well, John, that's great stuff. As with everybody else, I wanted to give an opportunity for you to share your pearl of wisdom with our listeners. What would you say to our executives, business owners that you've seen in people that are successful that's been most impactful?
Well, I think it's a lot like Emil and I were talking and John and I were talking. I think you have to focus on what it is you do and what you want to do. And if as long as those two things match, I think you're 50% down the road or better, because you're not going to be good at what you don't like to do.
It's so just, kind of vision plus passion equals results kind of thing?
Absolutely. And don't try to be good at 10 things. Be good at one thing, yeah. Or be really, really good at one thing.
So deep, not wide. Same thing that...
Yeah. See, the problem with going last is, John and Emil stole all my stuff.
All the thunder's gone. Emil was complaining because he was done, and he took everybody else's thunder.
See, and how do you think I feel?
I know, right? God, unbelievable.
I even reached into Emil's right pocket, and I have all those leads.
You have all those, you have those cards? Did you get the cash?
Nice,
that's
nice
what I want to know.
Yeah.
The cash is first, wasn't it? Because the leads might not turn to cash, man. You got to know what to go for first. All right. So... John, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Well, the best way is through accountingnewsreport.com. And they can go on the website, and my email address and my phone number on there, and I'd love to talk to anyone and help anyone out I can.
Now, Stone said you're in Vegas. Are you?
And my business is headquartered there. I'm also of course registered to do business in Georgia. It's just, and again, as further proof as if we need it, that accountants are not boring, they hold a majority of their conferences in Las Vegas, so I have to spend a lot of my time there.
What is done in Vegas stays in Vegas, so they don't want the word to get out. But
well, except for the CPE.
Oh,
They usually take that home with them.
That's right.
Oh, God. Let's hope that's all they take home with them.
Oh, man, this is a great one. All right, so guys, thank you. Emil, John. Stone, everybody, it was a great show. We appreciate your time. And we will talk to you all again next week. Until then, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.